Mellon, Ph.D., author of Waking Your Dreams.
Wholeness and Wisdom with your host, psychologist Parthenia Izard. Parthenia is a psychologist and certified natural health care practitioner who will show you alternative paths toward health with a holistic approach. Call with your questions or comments at 610-664-4100. Now here's the host of Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom, psychologist Parthenia Izard.
Good morning to those of you listening to our live broadcast or live internet simulcast today, July 28, 2007. And hello to those of you listening to an internet rebroadcast tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time or possibly Wednesday or Thursday this week. The link for that is on my site. You are listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izard, at WWDB 860 on the AM dial. I know that's strange to say dial, when most of you may not be listening on it and have something with a dial, but anyway, and simulcast on an international internet station. To call into the program, call 866-909-9855 or send emails during the show to wellnessradio@amtherapies.com. On this program, we discuss alternative medicine therapies, related products, and issues, and we do it with the experts. Only try the therapy shared here after consulting with your physician. Last Saturday, my guest was Bishop Bernard Jordan, Ph.D., discussing his prophetic ministry and his new book, The Laws of Thinking. At that show's end, we did discuss the herb garlic and an introduction to pranayama. If you missed that show, you can go to my website at www.amtherapies.com. Click on the Seventh Wave link to hear the show. For appointments with me or for general information, call 610-660-7710. My guest today is David Spiro, RN, and author of Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It. At the end of the program, we will discuss the herb ginseng and more on pranayama or the breathing meditation ujjayi if time permits. Now it's time for our wellness news. Reading is a vital skill for sick people. This came out July 23rd from Chicago. Illiteracy and illness don't mix, according to a U.S. study that says patients who can't read have a higher mortality rate than patients who can. The study released by the School of Medicine at Northwestern University Monday found that illiterate patients have daunting problems when it comes to following medication instructions, hospital forms, and even appointment slips. When patients can't read, they're not able to do the things necessary to stay healthy, end quote, said Dr. David Baker, a lead author of the study published that week in Archives of Internal Medicine. Quote, they don't know how to take their medications correctly, and they don't understand when to seek medical care, and they don't know how to care for their diseases, end quote. The 10-year study followed 3,260 Medicare patients in Ohio, Florida, and Texas who took part in a literacy test using pill bottles and other health-related materials. Very telling, very telling. Okay, as I said earlier, David Spiro is our guest today, RN. He's a 55-year-old nurse, journalist, activist, and health educator living in San Francisco. He has taken care of people in a wide variety of settings, from hospitals to community health centers and to home care. In 1989, when a father of two young children, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. He had to learn something harder than taking care of other people, how to take care of himself. David became a health coach, working successfully with chronically ill people to maximize their health and their lives. He gives workshops for healthcare providers on building patients' capacity for self-care. In this practice, he soon realized that health and illness are socially created. Teaching self-care led David to diabetes. He had given talks and led workshops at diabetes clinics, hospitals, and community centers all over the country. He researched, read, and studied with great teachers. He discovered some important truths about diabetes, especially who gets it and why, who profits from it, and what can we do about it. He counsels healthcare providers on more effective social ways to help their patients. He leads wellness groups and support groups and has co-written educational programs for people with arthritis asthma, allergies, chronic pain, insomnia, and other conditions. David is currently on the faculty of New Health Partnerships, Improving Care by Involving Patients, a project of the Institute of Healthcare Improvement. He presented on activating patients, families, and community at IHI's 2006 annual conference and has addressed three of the last four annual meetings of the American Association of Diabetes Educators. Good morning, David.
Hi. Thanks for having me. For waking me up.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, when people are far away from your time zone, it's often a bit tricky when it comes to scheduling these kinds of things. But thank you for hearing the phone when it rang.
That's great.
Where are you from, David?
Originally?
Yes.
Well, some people who can hear accents will notice that I'm from upstate New York, from Buffalo, New York.
Oh.
And I was a But I've been out here in California for the last 30-plus years.
Okay. Well, New York is my state also, Westchester, New York, middle of the, lower part of the state there.
Sure.
Now, what guided you to nursing?
Oh, good question. I want to say I'm happy to be on this show, a holistic health show, because this is what I used to do a lot because of the first book, The Art of Getting Well, which is all about taking care of yourself and holistic approaches to that.
And it's still
extremely 100% valid. Uh-huh. But what got me into nursing, I think, was I think maybe because my mother was a nurse.
Oh, yes.
I really don't know. But I was 22 years old. I didn't have a career, and I just. Something drew me to. I like taking care of people.
Well, see, that's why I was going to ask you. When you were a little person, were you playing games? Were you always taking care of people or helping them and that kind of thing? But I'm just glad that a lot of people gravitate to those types of professions, because we certainly need people like you who care enough about people or being in those kind of professions that you make that choice, because it's not easy. It's certainly not easy.
I feel like I'm still trying to take care of people in a different way. I'm not at anybody's bedside anymore.
Mm-hmm,
since
mm-hmm.
I got my multiple sclerosis in 89, I did it for about seven more years, but I haven't for the last 10 or 12.
Okay.
But I'm helping people in other ways.
Right, okay. And especially through your book. Books, you know, that touches, it's an infinite number of people that can be reached that way. After all your training and experience as a nurse, what made you think to explore self-care?
Well, it was forced on me, and I think that's how it happens for most people. You know, our society does not promote self-care. It doesn't endorse it, right? You don't. This is not something that children learn in school or usually from their parents. You know, you don't hear about self-care on Sesame Street. So, you know, we even have I think self-care goes against everything that our society sort of believes that our lives are about and our bodies are for, which is mostly to produce and consume. You know, you probably remember the story of the ant and the grasshopper, right? You know, the ant worked and worked and worked, and the grasshopper goofed off.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the ant had plenty to eat in the winter while the grasshopper starved. Mm-hmm. But they never tell you about the ant's chronic back pain and high blood pressure.
Oh, that's great addition.
People don't go for it until it's forced on them, and that's what happened to me. You know, when I got MS, I found that I needed to do some things differently. I needed to learn how to relax. I needed to pay attention to what I ate. I needed to keep my body mobile and strong with exercises of different kinds and yoga and things like that. So that's how it happened. It wasn't because of any, you know, spiritual breakthrough, although I think it led to some spiritual growth.
So then I guess when the MS presented itself, you started doing some reading that made you realize how much your own activity or your own thought processes or your own involvement would make a difference?
Well, it was partly reading, and it was partly just experiencing, you know, trying to pay attention. And that's an important part of self-care, which people don't do. I talk about it in both of the books of, you know, you have to put the energy, what they call self-monitoring, which is, you know, paying attention to how you're doing, paying attention to what makes you feel better and what makes you feel worse, and then acting on that information. But most people are so busy pushing through their day, you know, taking care of their kids or working, mostly working, that they don't notice, or they just ignore.
And I think a lot of times people are so frightened, either by what diagnosis they may be given or by what they think is going on, that it sort of, it inhibits their ability to take control.
I think that's true. I mean, that little news note that you said about illiteracy.
Mm-hmm.
Illiteracy. I mean, that's a fairly extreme case, illiteracy, mm-hmm. but if you can't read a pill bottle. Mm-hmm. But anybody who has less confidence and less in their abilities to make this intelligent decisions and less ability to comprehend the information that's being given them or doesn't have access to the information in the first place is going to have a harder time.
Well, now, before we go to break, the fact that you didn't have diabetes, how did that become a focus or the focus of your next book?
Well, as you said in the introduction, when The Art of Getting Well came out, I started getting out and going around the country, actually. I did a lot of speaking and teaching about self-care and how do you overcome barriers to get in the way of taking care of yourself. But it turned out that people in the diabetes world were the only people who cared about that.
Ah,
you know, and American medicine doesn't acknowledge that self-care is important, except to a certain extent in diabetes, and so I started working with that. And I
found
out
well,
this,
man, yeah. You know you have to hold that thought.
And,
well, you're listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. This portion was sponsored by Alternative Medicine Therapies. We will be back with David Spiro, RN, author of Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It.
Why should you passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments? It's time to take charge of your life with preventive measures. Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies at 610-660-7710 for an initial consultation. Alternative Medicine Therapies offers a holistic approach to preventive care, unlike conventional medicine that tries to correct the illness that exists instead of preventing it altogether. Don't let anyone tell you that your situation is hopeless. Alternative Medicine Therapies like iridology, kinesiology, reflexology, energy medicine, which includes Qi Light therapy, acupressure, and psychological consultations has an amazing track record of positive results. Why suffer when Alternative Medicine Therapies with psychologist Parthenia Izzard is here to help? Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies today for an initial consultation at 610-660-7710 and visit their website at www.amtherapies.com. And don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom, psychologist Parthenia Izzard's radio program each Saturday morning at 9 on AM 860 WWDB.
Don't passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments. Listen to me, Parthenia Izzard, at my new time, Saturday mornings at 9 for Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom. I am a local natural health care practitioner and psychologist. I will show you alternative paths toward health with an holistic approach. Don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, Parthenia Izzard, at my new time, Saturday mornings at 9, only on AM 860 WWDB. You are listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. The answer to last week's ultimate trivia item was that the entire bilberry plant is used medicinally. Today's ultimate trivia item, again for your initial consultation discount, is what part of blue cohosh is used medicinally? Call in at 866-909-9855. Today we're talking with David Spiro, RN, and author of Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It. Before we went to break, David, you were talking about how you got to the diabetes piece.
Yeah. As I said, the only place where American medicine mm-hmm. pays attention to self-care is in yeah, diabetes, and even then it's mostly lip service, but mm-hmm. more and more they're realizing that it's really totally up to the patient how well things are going to go when somebody has diabetes because they're in charge of themselves 100% of the time and they're in the office, you know, 1% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the places that I was getting hired to speak, and so this brought me in contact with all different kinds of people who worked with diabetes and who had it, and I discovered that self-care will only take you so far. I said that it turned out that I started doing a lot of research of why people couldn't do better no matter how hard they seemed to try. The people who couldn't change their behavior to live a healthier life or seemed like they couldn't. People who did change their behavior and their health still didn't improve. Because, researching into this, I found out that really we're talking about type 2 diabetes here. This is the one that's epidemic. This is the one that's sweeping the world. What they used to call adult onset, that's normally associated with being overweight
mm-hmm.
and being stressed.
Which we now know can occur. Onset can be any time.
Absolutely. I've seen them myself as young as 5,
yeah.
Which is awesomely awful. Oh. Diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and related illnesses, by the way, we're not just talking about diabetes. This mm-hmm. would apply just as much to things like hypertension, high blood pressure, to asthma, you find this, to depression even, mm-hmm. that these are environmentally caused, and people need power to resist the environment because our environment is so unhealthy.
Okay, before we get there, because we're going to really cover the book pretty thoroughly, I wanted to sort of lay a little bit more foundation. In your, in the foreword, you refer to Dr. Mate, is that how he pronounces it?
Yeah.
And you talk about the consequence of social, you know, that all these things are a consequence of social and economic forces that deprive people of power in their lives. Okay, you want to elucidate on that point?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what the book is about, which is it's something that people would rather pick up a book that gives them a pill or an herb that they can take, which this book doesn't, although I do mention several herbs. But, yeah, the point of power. Power is it's not my definition, but it's the ability to control 3 things, your environment, other people's behavior towards you, and your own behavior. And that's associated with things like income and with education and with social support, you know, how much help you've got, and with self-confidence. And people who have less of that who tend to be people who are poorer, people from disadvantaged communities,
more susceptible to these things.
Much more susceptible because you go out in the environment and there's sugar everywhere, right? There's barriers to exercise everywhere. I mean, our lives are not set up to move. Our lives are set up to keep us stationary. And our lives are set up to stress us out. And the less power you have, the harder your life is, the more stress you're going to have. And stress raises your blood sugar and also encourages you to eat things that are bad for you. So basically, the less money, the less education, the less power, the less support that you have, the more likely you are to get diseases like type 2 diabetes.
Okay, now that takes me. You're jumping a little bit ahead, so that's okay. You want to give us the anatomy of diabetes so that people have an understanding of what diabetes is and how these different parts of it manifest in terms of what you're talking about.
Right. Thank you. Type 2 diabetes. Well, there's 2 types. Diabetes is a disease of carbohydrate metabolism, which means that when you have diabetes, your body is not able to handle carbohydrates very well. Carbohydrates are sugars and foods that break down into sugar in your body. And we need them. We need them for energy. But our bodies need a hormone called insulin to get the sugar into the cells where it can be used for fuel. And in diabetes, in type 1 diabetes, you don't have insulin. Something has happened to your insulin-producing cells and you don't have it. And if you have type 1, you need injections of insulin or you die very quickly. But in type 2, which is the one that 400 million people have now, you are producing insulin, but your cells are what they call insulin resistant. They don't cooperate with the insulin. They won't take the glucose in, mainly because they've already got all they can use, because in most cases, you're not physically active enough. And so type 2 is associated with being overweight. It's associated with high blood pressure. And the sugar doesn't get into the cells, so it builds up in your blood, and you get these high blood sugar levels, which make you tired and set you up for infections, and people get kidney disease and kidney failure. They get higher rates of heart attacks. They can have visual problems. They can lose their eyesight sometimes. It's the number one cause of amputations of the legs, because the circulation gets bad. The sugar kind of gets in your is in your bloodstream, so it makes your circulation worse, and it causes other complications as well.
Now, I believe I read in the book also that it's it has a higher mortality rate associated with it than AIDS.
Well, not mortality rate, but total mortalities, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big problem. It's not a trivial disease. I mean, there are communities right here in this country where 60 or 70% of the adults have diabetes, and it completely disables the community because people are dragging around. You know, they don't have energy to do things or try to change their situation or to take care of themselves. And it's a major problem.
Okay, now we can come back to providing listeners with an overview of what they will find in your book. Again, I want to repeat the title, Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis. I love the title, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It. And ladies and gentlemen, it's an easy read. You'll be able to go through it. The stories and the quotes are fabulous, and you will enjoy it as well. Now, the first part... it focuses on the social causes. It's entitled A Profit-Driven Plague. And then part two is the exploration of a new and better approach, you know, the social movement approach that you favor. And it's called Health as a Movement. Okay, would you like to sort of, explain your division, and then let's go through an overview of the chapters.
Okay, well, you pretty much summed it up. I mean, the idea of this book is not... people can handle this largely on their own. Nobody can handle this completely on their own. But you can handle it largely on your own, but if you have the power to do it, if you have the resources and the support. But most people, even, you know, including me, I would say, and I don't have diabetes, but most people need support.
Yes.
Make changes in their health and in their behavior. And so the second half of the book is all about how you can change your own behavior, how you can get help, how medical systems can help, and how communities can help work together for their health, and especially families. I really would like to stress that, Dr. Izzard, because the inclusion of family and families working together makes a big, big difference. The first half of the book is about the social causes, which I basically outline, you know, bad food, barriers to exercise. I talk about human environments being like feedlots for cattle. In a feedlot, they're trying to make the cattle fat as fast as they can. So they're not allowed to move. They're not allowed to do anything. They don't have any control over their environment. They can't change anything, but there's plenty of food, and it's high-carbohydrate food and some meat byproducts. And when you think about that, I think that's not that different from a lot of human environments. You know, think about housing projects or big offices where people just sit at their desk all day, and then, or schools. We're forcing millions of kids into these environments where they're supposed to sit still all day, and then you turn them loose on, cafeterias with high-calorie food or vending machines with, high-fructose corn syrup soda, and then you expect them to stay healthy, or you blame them when they get fat. Well, they're in an environment that's designed to make them fat. So we need to change those environments. That's the way the book ends.
Okay, now when you talk about who predominantly falls victim or succumbs to these types of, I hate using the word diseases, but anyway, these health conditions, you want to share some of your information about the disenfranchised and the stress and how
Absolutely.
That all relates.
Well, thank you for asking that question, because that's what gets left out of all the mainstream discussions of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Native Americans and American Indians have the highest rate of diabetes in the world,
mm-hmm.
and African Americans have the second highest rate of diabetes in the world,
mm-hmm.
Among major ethnic groups. There are Pacific Island groups that are now have it even worse, but that's all over recent developments. So basically, the less power you have, you think about the Native Americans.
Mm.
They had a very, very, very healthy lifestyle before. They were, they were athletic. They were hunters and gatherers, and then they were farmers, and they worked hard. But now, their land's been taken away from them. Their self-determination, their control's been taken away from them. Their culture's been taken away from them. Their religion's been taken away from them. So they're left with television, and they're left with junk food, basically. And they, and so you can see the same thing too. It's goes right up the scale for anything. You can look at a group and judge how much power they have by how much diabetes they have, and you will be right 100% of the time. Southerners get in the United States get more diabetes than Northerners, and women get more than men, and people with high school education get less than people with a college education. It just goes right along like that, and it's not because they don't know what to do. It's because they can't do it, and it's because of stress. And stress is a reaction to being powerless. Stress is a reaction to when you feel threatened by something that you don't have the power to control. And given that, the less power you have, the more stress you will have. And stress raises your blood sugar. Stress gets you ready to fight or flee, right? It's a survival response for being chased by a lion or something. It'll raise your blood sugar. It'll raise your blood pressure so that you can run away. It increases your insulin resistance, which we mentioned was the cause of type 2 diabetes, so that you won't waste the sugar on other things. But the thing is, we're not running away from anybody's lion. There's nobody to run away from. There's nobody to fight. You just sit there and worry. And so if you're stressed because you're worried about losing your job, you're worried about, you know, your kids in Iraq, you're worried about
paying your bills
or taking care of your grandmother and your children and everybody at the same time. Mm-hmm. And you can't run away from that, and it goes day after day, and it keeps your blood sugar high, it keeps your blood pressure high, and pretty soon, you know, you'll have diabetes.
Okay, so that's the toxic environment you're presenting as the primary cause. And when things or changes are made in that area, there are benefits.
Yeah, you see that all the time. Share
one of those cases that you discuss in the book.
Well, yeah, I can give you some good. There are some good examples. For example, on the community level, there's a group in Santa Ana, California, called Latino Health Access, and
they
work
with
Latino, L-A-T-I-N-O, mm-hmm. Health Access, L-H-A. I'm pretty sure the website's latinohealthaccess.org.
Okay, good.
And they have a population of very poor, mostly immigrant workers down there in Santa Ana. And the diabetes rate was enormous. It was almost at the level of the African American communities. And there was no place to exercise. There was no place to move. Kids would come straight home from school and come straight inside because the parents were afraid to have them out in the street, which, you know, anybody who lives in a poor community can identify with that. You don't want your kids outside, but then the kids aren't moving, and they're eating junk food. So anyways, what these guys did is they organized in the community to get some parks and where people could play, and even, you know, adults and kids could play together, and organize the parents to actually staff the parks. So now you've got the community working together, and that reduces stress, because working together with other people reduces stress. And they can also exercise, and they're making a huge difference, and they do a tremendous amount of work on getting people to take care of themselves too. They have these classes, these diabetes classes that they run right in people's garages, and they've lowered people's sugar levels by about a third, which is an incredible result.
Very good. And now in the third chapter, you talk about the toxic environment, but you focus on food and inactivity. Well, we've already touched on that pretty well. And then in chapter four, the medical system, friends and enemies. Before we go to break, you want to just give a tease so that they have a feel for what's in that chapter?
The medical system, we have a $2 trillion medical system in this country, and I think I can back up that it probably does more harm than good. And in the case of diabetes, where it's all about self-care, the medical system has done a very poor job of helping people take care of themselves, and in fact has gotten in the way because they're too busy pushing drugs.
And of course, sometimes you give an example of actually the phraseology that a doctor used when describing to the patient what their condition was that made it worse.
Well, the term chronic progressive, which is applied to diabetes and many, many other conditions, is a completely disempowering term. I mean, if somebody tells you you're chronic progressive, that means that you can't do anything about it. You can't get better. The best you can hope for is to slow down the rate at which you get worse. And what does that do to your ability to take care of yourself? Because people need to believe in themselves to be able to make these changes.
Very good. Okay, you are listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izard. This portion of the program highlights mangosteen, a wonderful immune system builder. Mangosteen contains xanthones, an incredibly potent antioxidant with many health benefits, ranging from maintaining healthy immune system protection to promoting joint flexibility. There's a link on my site, www.amtherapies.com. We'll be back with David Spiro, RN, and author of Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It. Don't passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments. Listen to me, Parthenia Izzard, at my new time, Saturday mornings at 9 for wellness, wholeness, and wisdom. I am a local natural health care practitioner and psychologist. I will show you alternative paths toward health with an holistic approach. Don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, Parthenia Izzard, at my new time, Saturday mornings at 9, only on AM 860 WWDB.
Why should you passively exist with backaches, allergies, PMS, colds, flu, and other ailments? It's time to take charge of your life with preventive measures. Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies at 610-660-7710 for an initial consultation. Alternative Medicine Therapies offers a holistic approach to preventive care, unlike conventional medicine that tries to correct the illness that exists instead of preventing it altogether. Don't let anyone tell you that your situation is hopeless. Alternative Medicine Therapies like Iridology, Kinesiology, Reflexology, Energy Medicine, which includes Qi Light Therapy, acupressure, and psychological consultations has an amazing track record of positive results. Why suffer when Alternative Medicine Therapies with psychologist Parthenia Izzard is here to help? Contact Alternative Medicine Therapies today for an initial consultation at 610-660-7710 and visit their website at www.amtherapies.com. And don't miss Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom, psychologist Parthenia Izzard's radio program each Saturday morning at 9 on AM 860 WWDB.
You are listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard. Next week, July 28, 2007, my guest will be Ruby D with her reminiscences. At that show's end, we will discuss the herb ginger and more on pranayama. Now we are talking with David Spiro, RN, and author of Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It. Okay, yes, David, you want to continue a little bit or wrap that up, you know, when it comes to hope? Even with diabetes, there's hope.
Oh, absolutely. Not only is there hope, but type 2 diabetes is... not only can you stabilize your condition, but many, many times you can reverse it. And that is rarely told to you. And sometimes, it helps to get some medications to participate in that process. But the most important thing is to exercise and change the way you eat and reduce your stress. And if you can do those things, which millions of people do, you can get better. But the medical system normally doesn't help very much, although, as I talk about in the book, there are a lot of healthcare providers that are starting to learn that and figure out how they can do better ways of helping people help themselves.
Okay, at this point, you want to share your web address and any contact information?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, please look me up at davidspirorn.com, davidspirorn.com. There's stuff about this book, there's stuff about the other books, and a lot of articles, and actually talks that you can even listen to.
Okay, and what about for those who are not computer savvy, who may still not have a computer in their home? Do you have a phone number they might be able to call?
Sure, absolutely. You could call 415-585-9851. You'll probably have to leave a message, and I will call you back.
And for you computer techs, what about the email address?
Write me at nurse, N-U-R-S-E, nurse, at davidspirorn.com.
Okay, I hope everybody got that. And if not, you can always call me or, send an email, and I'll be certain to pass that on.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to people, and I can usually help.
Okay, health as a movement, from shame to strength.
Yeah, well, that's about the fact that people who are tending to get diseases like type 2 diabetes and related conditions tend to be people who have less self-confidence, less belief in themselves. themselves. They tend to blame it on themselves because their doctors and the health environment blames them for, because usually people with type 2 are overweight, mm-hmm. and anybody who's overweight tends to get blamed for it, mm-hmm. and tends to feel less confident and less good about themselves, at least in a health setting. You know, our society is so fat phobic. I mean, it's just anybody who's the least bit overweight gets, you know, it's supposed to be some kind of character flaw or something when it's clearly an environmental situation. So people need to believe that they're good people, believe that they are worth fighting for. And, you know, it's not just weight. It's also, you're poor, you're uneducated, whatever it is that, you know, you think that I'm just a bad person, there's no help for me. So, and people do tend to feel ashamed. Most of the people I interviewed for my book hadn't even told their friends they had diabetes because mm-hmm. they were ashamed of it. So you got to get over that, and that's what that chapter's about.
Okay, and then we have self-care as a political act.
Well, same thing. I mean, mm-hmm. society is saying that you're not worth very much. I told this story. I met a guy, a real cool African-American guy I met in Oakland, who was diagnosed with diabetes and immediately started changing his diet and started exercising every morning and got it completely under control. And I asked him, how did you do that? Because, you know, nobody else in the community was doing it. And he said, I love myself. Mm-hmm. He said, I think that's the best thing I can do. He said, if you love yourself, you'll take care of yourself. If you don't, you won't. But you have to do that before you can take care of anybody else. And he said he got that attitude from his mother. And people need that attitude. I would love to have people love themselves more. I think that would make a huge difference.
Strength in numbers.
Well, that is my main, that's my number one take-home message. That means get together with other people, you know, get together with your family, get together with other patients if you're diagnosed, if you have a diagnosed illness, get together with your neighbors to do things like, you know, move more or reduce your stress. So many people, there's help available for people, but people in this, again, in this culture, are trained not to ask for help, to try to do everything themselves. And life goes a lot easier and health is a lot easier to maintain if we work together with other people. But also, if we want to change the environment and save the next generation, save our children from this epidemic, we need to change the environment, and that involves people working together.
Taking to the streets.
Well, same thing. That's where I talk about the Latino Health Access Group and other groups through Arizona, and there's a number of groups that I report on and the reservations and things. That taking it to the streets means getting out. You may have to get out there and actually confront some of the powers that are making your environment so unhealthy.
Or gently suggest.
Or gently suggest, yes, right.
Sometimes the approach makes the difference.
You're right. And you don't always have to go up against, you know, the president. A lot of times it's just, can you go to the local store, you know, and say, could you please move the sugar stuff and the candy to the back of the store so that everybody who comes to your cash, you know, your cash register isn't scarfing up these junk food, you know, and they might do it. Or will you stock some healthier food, you know, things like, or go to your school board. That would be the very best thing that people could do to, you know, so many schools now don't have physical education. Some of them don't even have recess. A lot of them have vending machines with junk food in them. I mean, we could change that. We could really help the health of a whole generation.
Yeah, that was quite an accomplishment. President Clinton, was able to affect by changing a lot of what was provided in the vending machines in schools. I don't know how he did that, but it made
a big
difference.
There's still a lot more changes need to be made. Some schools have it, some schools don't.
Now, the movement takes shape. Is that also where you have more information about links and?
Well, there's a whole resource section with a lot of links.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, since this is a holistic health show, I did want to mention that there are herbs. There are a lot of herbs that help diabetes.
Oh,
and
sure.
I mentioned six of them or seven of them in the book, and there are actually others. And the easiest one, the one that actually works very well for a lot of people, is cinnamon.
Yes. Okay, I know about the cinnamon, yes.
But I listed about six others.
With many of my clients. And what's funny is a lot of things, when I test people for the strengths and weaknesses in their bodies and what things will make them strong, that is direct support for the kinds of herbs that you did list in the book. And but it's just so hard to get people to realize how the nutritional piece makes a difference. And they just have to trust it and try it and see the changes.
Yeah. I mean, I list six herbs in the book, all of which have reduction in blood sugar levels and cholesterol by somewhere between 15 and 25%. So if you're taking, you know, if you're taking two of them, you'll probably be back to normal. But you're still going to need to move your body.
Oh, yes.
With any, I mean, that's the number one treatment for diabetes.
And then you close with diabetes as a turning point, and I love the way you...
Yeah, I mean, that just is, if people start to take care of themselves, it frequently changes their whole lives. You know, not just health, but the way they relate to other people and their work. And I'm saying that the same thing can apply to families and communities. You know, that it's a crisis. I mean, it's a terrible thing. It's not our fault. It's not the fault of the people who have it. It's an environmental illness. But if we get together to make some changes in it, it can also help us in a lot of other ways.
You share a quote at the end, another America Braccio.
America Braccio, yeah.
Yes.
She's actually the director of Latino Health Access. And,
oh, okay.
And I love that. She came from Venezuela. She was practicing MD in Venezuela. And like a number of foreign doctors, she couldn't do that here. But she also found that taking care of people one by one wasn't as important as getting them together in communities. And she said that in order for people to have hope, they must believe that they can make a difference, that they can influence change in their lives and the lives of others. In other words, that they have some power. These changes do not have to be large. They do not have to be spectacular. Hope can grow in the smallest of cracks. It's only necessary for people to take part in a project and to witness the changes it brings. If hope begins to take root, then anything will be possible. And I think that's why diabetes could be a turning point, or you know, anything, any health issue can be any issue can be a turning point in your life. If you start to realize that you can make changes and how you can do that, then you can start to change other things too. And so I hope that's what happens, and that's what I was trying to help, you know, people think about in the book.
Well, you do, and you do a very good job of it. What are some of the barriers to self-care?
Well, the number one barrier is too many other demands. you know, I'm just too busy. You know, I'm working two jobs, so how am I going to find time to exercise? Or, you know, another environmental barrier is, you know, you want to relax, but there's a lot of stress in your home, a lot of arguments in your home. There's bullets flying outside your home. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to relax in a situation like that. Self-confidence, you know, which people need for self-care, and I talk about this a lot in The Art of Getting Well, my first book, is you need four things. You need self-confidence, which is the belief that you can do it, you can make the change. You need hope, and you need a reason to do it, and you need support.
Okay, hold those thoughts, please. You are listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izard. This segment highlights Nature's Sunshine, who offers an extensive line of high-quality nutritional supplements. Whether you're looking for a multiple vitamin, a boost to your immune system, weight loss support, or an herbal combination specific to your health concerns, they can help. Get on the road to a healthier, happier life with Nature's Sunshine. There's a link on my site. We'll be back with David Spiro, RN, and author of Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis.
The digestive tract, a natural waste factory built within all of our bodies. Roughly 25 feet of tunnels designed to absorb nutrition and then dispel the waste. But what happens when the waste gets clogged up? More than 4 million Americans have frequent constipation, accounting for 2.5 million physician visits a year. Now there's AlloCleanse, an all-natural formula based on herbs and safe enzymes. AlloCleanse gently sweeps the entire digestive tract and supports comfortable, regular bathroom habits. You'll feel lighter, and you'll feel clean inside. And when you remove the waste buildup with AlloCleanse, you'll have more energy. Energy to use on other things, besides worrying about constipation.
For a risk-free trial of AlloCleanse, call 1-800-494-2132. Call in now to find out how you can get two free gifts with your order. Try AlloCleanse risk-free by calling 1-800-494-2132. That's 1-800-494-2132.
You are listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izard. Next week, I want to make sure you remember this, July 28th, my guest will be Ruby D. with her reminiscences. She had quite an extensive life, has, and has done quite a lot of things that it's important for you to know that. And at that show's end, we will discuss the herb ginger and more on pranayama. We're now talking with David Spiro, RN, and author of Diabetes, Sugar-Coated Crisis, Who Gets It, Who Profits, and How to Stop It. When we left for break, we were talking about some of the barriers to self-care. This might be a good time to sort of talk a little bit about who profits.
Yeah. Well, there are some people who profit by causing diabetes and related illnesses, including heart disease, and there are people who profit from treating it. And between them, that's a big group. And you know, among the people causing it, I would put the people who are pushing junk food on our children, and people also who are making it harder and harder to move our bodies to exercise. You know, kids used to play basketball, and now they're playing video basketball.
Right, their thumbs.
It doesn't have the same effect on your body. It doesn't promote your health. And treatments. But you can, on a larger scale, you can say anybody that makes people ashamed, that makes people feel unconfident of their ability to take care of themselves, is contributing and is profiting from that. And then, of course, on the other side, the treatment side, there's a gigantic industry, a drug industry, and it's not, for the most part, promoted to helping people actually get well. It's promoted to just keeping them sick and helping them kind of, you know, survive.
Well, I'm sure they want them to get better. They're just going along in a misguided fashion.
Yeah, they're going along in the way that works for them, too, though. You know, I mean, I talk in the book about how there were 4 diabetes centers in New York City in the 90s that were doing very good work of helping people help themselves. They all went out of business because they couldn't make any money, because the way our medical system funds things, it pays for severe illness. It doesn't pay for wellness. But at the same time that those centers were going under, over 50 dialysis centers opened to treat kidney failure, you know, the most expensive and severe complication of diabetes, and those all got paid for.
I, in all fairness, I think people really do believe that they're doing the right thing, and
yeah.
It's hard to get people to realize it's a lot. There's a simpler, healthier, less invasive way to approach pretty much anything. But I want to let you know we have a caller who has waited to the last part of our program. Hello, Lewis.
Hello.
Have a very few seconds to quickly share your question for Mr. Spiro.
Yes. I just want to say, from listening to the program, Nurse Spiro, it seems to me that the belief or the faith of like my father taught me, and the belief that he taught me in the ability of the immune system out of its millions of years of experience to heal my body was very important.
Well, yeah. I mean, and stress has a major impact on the immune system, but yes, you're right, people can heal. People do.
And their perspective, what they believe,
yes,
makes a difference.
And if they have, if they've been taught a faith, then they're never completely helpless.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Faith is help.
All right. That's what I wanted to add.
Thank you very much, Lewis, for adding that. And we're going to probably continue talking about that for a second.
Okay.
I see what he's saying. There are many people who are very religious or spiritual and have extensive faith, but somehow or another that's not translating into what's necessary for them to combat the hopelessness or helplessness that they may experience as a result of their societal circumstance.
I think faith is really, really valuable. And there are probably some people whose faith is strong enough that they can keep them, that can protect them from things like diabetes all by itself.
Right.
For most people, faith is one element. You know, it would need to be. It reduces stress. I mean, certainly if you believe that that God is looking out for you, or something like that, whatever your faith is, that that helps. But I don't usually think it's enough all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
If it makes you believe in yourself, to believe that you're a good person that has value, who's worth taking care of, then I think it'll be even more helpful.
Yes, and maybe seeing things as temporary and that there's going to be change eventually. But anyway, I want you to have time to share your final words of wisdom with us. So,
okay. Well, my take-home message, unfortunately, is not one that sells a lot of books, but it's that the most manage your diabetes and your other health problems is by getting together with your family, getting together with other patients. Ask your doctor if there's other patients that you can see. It turns out that patients who are seen in groups do better than people who are seen individually. And people in your neighborhood and in your community. So that's my number one message, even though it's not, you know, it's not pick up a pill, this will cure you. I'd like, you know, people, please visit my website, davidspirorn.com. You'll get a lot of ideas and a lot of links to other places that might help you.
Okay, give that web address one more time.
Okay, www.davidspirorn.com. If you leave out the RN, you'll get somebody else.
Oh, dear.
There's another David Spiro out there, but davidspirorn.com, and you'll get a lot of good resources there.
Well, very good. Thank you so much for being our guest today. Diabetes, sugar-coated crisis, who gets it, who profits, and how to stop it. Get it? David Spiro, RN. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good day. Okay, now it's time for our herb of the day. Today's herb is ginseng, the part used medicinally or its leaves and roots. Some of the phytochemicals include caffeic acid, synaptic acid. Nutrients include calcium, iron, magnesium, manganese, phosphorus, potassium, selenium, zinc, vitamins B1, B2, B3, and C. According to Balk, it aids in digestion, stimulates the appetite, and boosts circulation. Okay, now it's time for our asana-related information. I don't know what that sound was. Johnny is feverishly trying to locate the right. There we go. Pranayama. Savasana is preparation for pranayama. And pranayama should be started gradually, a little at a time. Even a few minutes are beneficial. And with practice, the time spent can be increased. Pranayama is best practiced in the early morning or evening in an airy room. The stomach and bowels should be empty. And again, this is Iyengar that we are using as our frame of reference for this information. It is not advisable to do it immediately before or after strenuous asanas, as these disturb the breath and lungs. It may be practiced after a quieting asana session consisting of supported inverted poses. Okay, you've been listening to Wellness, Wholeness, and Wisdom with me, psychologist Parthenia Izzard, at WWDB 860 AM and simulcast on the Internet. Next weekend, August 4, my guest will be Ruby D with her reminiscences. Did I give the right date last time? I hope so, yes. At that show's end, we will discuss the herb ginger and more on pranayama. Listen to the program live on your computer by clicking the Seventh Wave Network link on my site. Also find out about rebroadcasts and archived shows. Interested in advertising on the program? There's a link for that on my site also. Email inquiries and resumes to consult@amtherapies.com. If you know someone looking for office space, ask them to call the office at 610-660-7710. At Alternative Medicine Therapies, we offer the public iridology and kinesiology assessments, consultations in nutrition, meditation, acupressure, and psychosocial consultations. Online coaching, visit my website, www.amtherapies.com. Wellness, wholeness, and wisdom. Be well.